Good Monday morning to you. It's Mountain Money here on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley here with my co-host Doug Wells. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Renee.
We've got a great show ahead for our listeners. We're going to kick off this hour with the Pluralsight Chief Marketing Officer, Heather Zinzak. Pluralsight is what they call a unicorn company, Doug. We're going to tell our listeners what that means. And also, there was a big announcement about Pluralsight earlier, about a month ago. I think early September is when they announced it. Big expansion planned for them. We'll talk to Heather Zinzak about that.
Well, speaking of unicorns, sometimes our kids go to the Park City Library to hear cute stories about magical creatures like unicorns. Our second guest is going to be a representative from the Park City Library, but today's conversation is not on unicorns and magical creatures. Today's conversation is how business people here in town can use the business and the finance resources that we have right down the street that's free for everybody. So we're going to talk about that. And then our last guest is going to be Brad Owen. He is the CEO and founder of a company called Never Bounce. If you've ever tried to communicate with potential clients via email, you know how frustrating it can be when emails bounce. And his company is cleverly named Never Bounce to help people with that situation. So it'll be a good show. You want to stay tuned. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment.
Whitney Wall here from Park City Mountain and KPCW's sponsor. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
This is Matt Mitten, attorney with Jones Waldo, a Park City law firm. Longtime supporters of KPCW, our firm provides estate planning and other personal legal services to residents of Summit County and beyond. We are online at joneswaldo.com and 435-200-0085.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. The time is 9:09. It's Monday, October 2nd. We've got a great show. We're going to kick it off with some big news. The Governor's Office of Economic Development announced in early September that Utah-based Pluralsight, I want to make sure I say that correctly, will expand in the state, and they're going to add close to 2,500 jobs. They're going to add about $86 million in new state revenue and about $371 million in capital investment. Governor Gary Herbert says Pluralsight is a Utah business success story, and we've got a woman at the front line of that success story in studio with us today. It's Heather Zinzak, Pluralsight's Chief Marketing Officer. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. So the big announcement in early September, and then you guys just had an exciting conference, user conference in Salt Lake City. It's been a busy month for you guys. Let's kick it off with the beginning of the month. Tell us about how the agreement came together with the state of Utah.
So Pluralsight has seen phenomenal growth over the last few years, and we really need to expand. And we strategically looked and analytically looked at markets all over the U.S. and looked at many factors and found that Utah really was the best place to continue our expansion. So yes, the founder's from here. Yes, we founded the company here, but it was more than that. It was analytically what was the best market for the tech scene. And so we've now decided to put our corporate headquarters. We've consolidated many offices around the U.S. and we're going to really invest here in Utah and invest in the team in Utah.
So talk to us about how Utah compares competitively from the economic development incentives that they gave you. And I want to share with the audience first just to reiterate what Renee had shared earlier. Pluralsight is talking about adding almost 2,500 jobs over the next 10 years. That's a lot of jobs. The wages are going to be approximately $1.4 billion to those employees. And it's going to generate just under $100 million of wage tax, salary tax for the state of Utah. So Utah does what's called a post-performance incentive, which means you actually have to do all these things before you get any of this. How do other states do it? As you were exploring other options, what are the other programs?
To be honest with you, I'm not as familiar with the other states from an incentive basis, but what we did look at thoroughly was the number of potential engineering talent here, the cost of living here, the wages here, the ability to attract talent from out of state. As any tech leader will tell you, or maybe any leader in Utah, getting folks to come from Seattle and San Francisco and the Bay Area, we've had some success there, more so than if we picked a location. I don't want to pick on another city, so I wouldn't name one. But if we picked a location that wasn't as wonderful as the great state of Utah. So we looked at factors from that perspective. And obviously, the government incentive was key, but it wasn't the main driving factor. We looked at where can we get the best talent and have the right people to grow our company, because that's really what was most important.
And you have employees in Farmington and Lehigh and South Jordan, is that right?
We have, right now today, we have the state of Utah, we have Farmington offices where most of our employees are, and we had a smaller engineering office in Lehigh that we're moving in October, all of our engineering teams to South Jordan. We have a new office opening up, and that'll be our engineering and product space until this large corporate headquarters is built, hopefully, knock on wood, in the next 18 to 24 months.
And where will that be? I know Davis County really hopes to keep you up there, but I noticed in one of the press releases it said south of Salt Lake City.
So this was a very, I don't want to say controversial, but well thought out decision for the company, because it's hard to move. But when we looked at all the data, the best engineering pool and best talent pool with the most people, we didn't think we could accommodate the growth in Davis County. And so we're looking at locations between south of Salt Lake all the way down to Draper. And I know right now we have about four or five that range kind of basically from Murray to Draper.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting to see the tech hub that's been developed in South Salt Lake City, kind of with the Salt Lake City, Utah County line. It's just amazing how much tech talent is there. Almost like a miniature Silicon Valley, where a lot of those big name companies, and are all names that we've heard of, are kind of stealing employees from one another. And it's a little bit of a revolving door that I think could come back and say, in some ways, it's unhealthy. So I'm surprised that the furthest south you're going is kind of Draper, because it's kind of Draper South is where that hub is. What's the thinking for staying Draper or north?
Well, we have a lot of employees right now in Farmington, and a lot of those folks are going to have to commute. So we actually looked at an employee-by-employee basis on commute times and tried to find the best compromise, but still being able to take advantage of the talent down south, to be honest with you. And so it seemed like the best compromise, because we could still take advantage of the tech talent in those areas. And Doug, you're right. It's not only the big names you know here in Utah, like the Adobes, et cetera, but it's large corporate headquarters who've put offices here, like Oracle and eBay and Dell. So there is fighting for that talent. But the good news is there's a ton of universities in that area dumping out engineers every year. So the talent base is growing. So both demand and supply are growing in that area.
Let's back up a little bit and talk about Pluralsight. The company was identified by Fortune magazine as one of 174 firms with a valuation of $1 billion or more. That's why you're called a unicorn company. Can you tell our listeners about Pluralsight, please? How did it start? How many employees do you currently have? What do you guys do?
Sure. So the company started over 14 years ago. There were four gentlemen. One of them is our current CEO and co-founder, who were teaching folks how to code in classrooms. They were traveling around the world. And they realized that, with the onset of the internet and the ability to share information everywhere, that the way to learn about technology was through technology. So they moved to 100% online almost 10 years ago. And now it's completely an online tool for training. So we have over 6,000 courses, and we don't create our own courses. We have over 1,500 of the world's best experts. So if you want to learn how to code in Salesforce, the guy who runs Salesforce for Google is our author, and he will teach you how on our site. We have the world's top security expert out of Australia if you want to take courses on cybersecurity. So it's truly a marketplace. Over 6,000 courses, 1,500 experts, and then a lot of analytics metrics around that. You can test your own score, understand where you need to start. If you're the head of a tech team, you can understand where the talent resides in your team and where are the gaps. And so that's really what our product does. We have about 25% are individuals who buy. Doug was telling us earlier that he's a customer, so thank you, Doug. He's taught himself how to code, partially using Pluralsight. And the other 75% are businesses, companies who want to make sure that the technology is their competitive advantage and that they can keep up. And the way you do that is you have to have a trained workforce.
And share with the audience the term unicorn. What does unicorn mean, and why do they use that term?
So unicorn, as of 3 or 4 years ago, was a wonderful thing. It was all of these companies who had reached a $1 billion valuation. In recent years, it's still great to have a large valuation, meaning that you've raised money at a certain level. But I think you also have to show that you really have the value at that level. I tend to shy away from the term unicorn some, but I think Pluralsight really deserves it because we've been profitable every single year, which I think you would be hard-pressed to find another quote-unquote unicorn, meaning a privately held firm worth more than $1 billion that's had profits every single year since inception. And we to usually hit that kind of valuation, you have to have extreme growth. And we've seen over 80% growth over the last 5 years. So regardless of how we're classified, we are at our last valuation round, which was in 2015, we were over $1 billion, so we're much bigger than that now, and we've been growing significantly and are very profitable.
Yeah, it's kind of a cute term. It got coined about a decade ago, and the first time I heard it, I thought, that's perfect, but now it's so overused. But the idea is, a unicorn is this mythical creature that's hard to find, and that's how rare it is for a company to reach a $1 billion valuation. And in fact, there's very, very few companies that, more so today, but still very few companies ever reach $1 billion in valuation. And Pluralsight is interesting, I think, because you do the online learning, and thanks for mentioning I taught myself to code. It's one of the best platforms to do it. What I like as a person that's fairly frugal is they have these annual subscriptions, and then you can use as many of their resources as you want. But what's unusual about Pluralsight in getting to the $1 billion valuation is, at least in your early days, you guys grew by acquisition. You were acquiring other platforms. Is that still the strategy, or what is the growth strategy going forward?
So initially, in the first eight years, they were completely grew through bootstrapped. So didn't have venture funding, completely grew on their own profits, grew 100% year over year, just through their own, just honestly how great the product was and how much the need was for it. And then Aaron Sconard, our CEO, realized we could grow faster if we took on some venture capital. And we did. And we used that to fund acquisitions. And we did do about 8 acquisitions. And there were 2 primary goals of our acquisitions. One was to increase our content library. So we almost doubled it. And we went into areas that we didn't automatically have an author base. So it really gave us a leg up and a defensible moat that I don't think anyone could catch up with us at this point. And the second thing it did for us is it gave us some technology and product technology that CIOs and CTOs really want to use. We really enhanced our analytics. We provided online mentoring, because that's kind of the last thing. Why would you still go to classroom? You can't raise your hand online. Well, now you can. You can raise your hand online and a mentor pops up in video chat. So some things like that we added from a product perspective. We haven't done an acquisition in almost a year, and we don't have any big acquisitions on the horizon, but it is a really good way to grow quickly in an area if you identify an area that you want to be stronger, that you're weaker in. So I wouldn't write it out.
Well, Doug just mentioned the annual subscription. Let's talk about cost. How much is that?
So it's $29 a month, or $2.99 a year for the individual. And a business license is $4.99, because you get access to all the analytics and assessments. And then the enterprise license on an annual basis per user is $6.99.
So I want to jump in on that. Renee, I know you have a follow-up, but just think about that. For $299, and I'll let you know they have a great Black Friday special, and Thanksgiving is coming up. So it's even less than that on Black Friday. But for $299, you literally can teach yourself to code. I mean, it's just an incredible value if you use it.
And you also offer to these companies who subscribe, or maybe just on an individual basis, how to take a technology IQ.
Exactly. So we launched Pluralsight IQ at our user conference last week. We'd been doing some beta testing with it, so people had already been using it. We officially launched it last week. And it's kind of like, I don't know if you guys saw the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt, but you know, the baseball industry changed because people started using analytics for who they had on the field. CIOs and CTOs need the same thing. They need to know their players, who's strong in what skill set, who's weak in what skill set, where do they need to augment their bench, and how do they need to improve their stats. And so Pluralsight really gives not only the individual the ability, so now when Doug goes on and wants to learn some more coding, he can take a test and skip the entry-level courses. It'll create a custom path for him based on where his knowledge is, so he doesn't have to start at the beginning. It saves him time. And for companies, now they can look at all of their team and understand who has what skills and where do they have skills gaps.
And you also announced that you're going to start giving back. And we're all about nonprofits here in Park City. So you launched Pluralsight One.
So Pluralsight One, there's an initiative in the tech community right now. 2,400 tech firms have joined it, where they pledge either 1% of equity, product, time, and profits. And we pledged 1% of all four, which I think is meaningful. And the other meaningful thing about it, which our CEO hasn't really tooted his own horn on this, but he gave his personal equity to make the 1%. He's that committed to the mission of bringing technology around the globe. So we've always around the globe been able to provide people access to the skills and the learning. With Pluralsight One, we can actually fund charities that help with things above and beyond the learning. So, for example, one of our partners is a company called Andela, which they teach technical training in Africa. They believe the African population growth is going to be the next India and be the next place where you're going to see a lot of outsourced technology jobs. And so we can offer the courses to folks in Africa, but if they don't have electricity and they don't have computers, they can't learn the courses. So this gives us a way to be able to fund other charities that really support the full mission of bringing technology around the globe.
You know, I had not heard that before. That's wonderful that you guys are doing it. And, you know, the world would be a much better place if virtually every company was doing something like that to give back. So kudos to you and to Pluralsight. I want to switch gears. You're a very senior marketing person. You're the chief marketing officer, and not just at Pluralsight, but previously you were chief marketing officer at Domo, which is a huge growth company here in Utah as well. The marketing world has changed a lot in the last decade. What does it take for a company to succeed on a marketing standpoint? If you were talking to a business owner, a lot of our listeners are business owners, what would you tell them they should be looking for in a marketing person in today's world that can be successful?
You know, Doug, I think you're totally right. The world has changed. I mean, just if you remember the show Mad Men, it was a show about what marketing was like in the 60s. You could have a great creative idea and then have martini lunches for the next 6 months until you won an award. And it's not like that today. Everything is numbers driven. It's analytical. You can and should measure everything. And so I actually didn't start my career as a marketer. I have two finance degrees, and I started out in product and in analytics and heavy on that side. And I think it's what's made me a great marketer in today's world is I'm very numbers-oriented, data-driven, and results-focused. And marketing today is that. With everything digital, you can measure everything and know how you're doing. It's no longer a creative black box in marketing. And the second thing I would say is specifically for growth companies, even if you're great at brand and messaging, which you have to be, and storytelling, which is really important for marketers, if you're not making sure the company makes money, nothing else matters. So you need to be really revenue focused and revenue driven if you're going to be a growth marketer.
Last Thursday, Vail had their quarterly earnings report and their investors call, and the CEO, Rob Katz, credited their tremendous growth at Vail to their data-centered marketing outreach. And when people buy that Epic Pass and they collect all that information on you, and they collect all that information on you when you buy that day pass at the window, and they all look at those numbers, it's all about data when it comes to marketing. And that affects us right here at home.
It does.
Are there a couple tools that you would suggest for small businesses that might be available that they could use to get more data-driven or to learn about this?
Well, I think it all starts with having a really good CRM system. So the last few companies I've worked at have used Salesforce, which is not necessarily for really small companies. Benioff would hate me for saying that, but the founder of or CEO of Salesforce. But I think it all starts with where do you keep your customer record? And so gathering, back to your Vail example, gathering really great information on your customers and having access to that and being able to analyze that and understanding all the touch points that your customers have, that's key. I don't think you can do anything else until you have a really great customer relationship management system. And then you also need really good web analytics, because if you're doing things on the web, you need to be able to see the digital touches that people have, because those touches can be like gold or they can be worth nothing, and you need to be able to know the difference.
So one key in the digital world is understanding what's working and what's not, right? There used to be a saying in marketing that, you know, one third of my advertising works, but I don't know which third it is. The truth is you do today.
We do today.
Right? So part of it is understanding what's working, what's not. The other part is you likely have a sales team. And you want a tool that is pushing people to do the right things at the right time. What about for small businesses, kind of prescriptive tools that will remind their salespeople to be doing the right thing? Are there tools small businesses should know about there?
There's, you know, I'm not an expert on small businesses, but I can talk about sales teams. So, you know, there are tools that help sales with their sequencing. There's dialers that actually dial for your inside sales team. There's tools like an outreach where they integrate when you should be emailing and when you should be calling and what should the messages be, and it pulls that data out of your CRM system. So there's a lot of tools that can really enable your sales team to be extremely prescriptive on what you know works best. Is it calling twice a week? Is it calling twice a month with 10 emails? Is it 50 emails and, you know, once a year? That really kind of take you through the right pattern.
So just last week, switching gears, you were on a panel after the film She Started It, which was about women tech entrepreneurs. What were some of your takeaways from that conversation?
The film was really great because it profiled two 21-year-old or 20 to 24-year-old women who were founding tech companies and trying to get access to Silicon Valley capital. And it was a challenge for them. And it kind of took you through their journey. And I think the thing for me, there was a lot of conversation in the audience. We had a wonderful group of people who attended. And there were women who spoke up in the generation who were 70 plus years old, who knew what it was like, you know, and I had to tip my hat to them and say, thank you for breaking the ground. And then there were women in my generation who've been struggling and working hard and following up on that path. But what the film really said to me is the generation that's coming up now is an awesome generation, and it gives me real hope. These women are hard charging and running and not taking no. And there was even on the panel a woman in high school who has a robotics club that she founded, and I was most impressed with her of everybody in the room.
Yeah, no, it was a great event. Few industries have as big of a gender bias, unfortunately, than is tech. So you're in that space right now, and I want to come back to that. But first, I want to ask, you know, in my impression, the career, the business opportunities for women during my mother's lifetime, right, who's 82 years old now. But when she started off, you know, a woman could be a nurse or a teacher or an administrative person. That was pretty much it. And by the end of her career, really, a lot of the world had opened up, not all of it, but a lot of it. But I think about my sister's lifetime, right, who's my age. She's 2 years older than me. I don't think we've made as much progress in the latest generation for women as we had the previous one. Do you think that's accurate, or do you think it might be misplaced?
I think it depends on how you define progress. So I feel like the generation of your mother's generation, they didn't have a seat at the table, and they had to force their way to the table. My generation, your sister's generation, we have a seat at the table, but it came with challenges. And I do think there was a lot of work with my generation, because it's the first time women had every choice available to them. And, you know, you could be a stay-at-home mom, and that's great. You could be a working mom, and that's great. You could be a career woman and have children or not have children. Like, every choice was available to you. And we were charting the territory on what that looked like. And we're still charting that territory. So I do think progress was made, but it depends on how you define progress. If you look at number of CEO positions in the Fortune 500, yeah, it's been slower than it should be. Number of board seats on public companies, absolutely, we haven't made the progress we should. But I do think we've made some big strides. And I think this generation that's coming up beneath us, we help define that any path can be your path. That you don't have to choose only one. You don't have to choose to be a nurse or stay at home. Like, you can choose whatever path you want. And they have some role models for what those different paths look like.
And look at publicly elected positions, too. Women have a long way to go there. And you had Michelle Obama speaking at your conference just a couple of weeks ago. You got to meet her. What was that like?
She was amazing. So, you know, you have expectations of people who are of celebrity status, and she lived up to everyone and then some. She's real and grounded and just wonderful. But what was so great at having her at this conference is it wasn't about politics. It was about her platform on education. She's done many things and still continues to have organizations that support education and learning around the globe, from Let Girls Learn, which focuses on girls, to Reach Higher, which focuses on people post-high school in inner cities that really need the skills to get jobs. And so she's just been a wonderful advocate for education. And we really wholeheartedly believe from our Pluralsight One initiative on making sure that people across the globe have access to the skills they need.
Well, that's a great note for us to wrap up on. She has been a great advocate for so many causes. And you know, I think your team at Pluralsight, I've been a fan for years from the sidelines. I also think you guys are great advocates for many of the things that make Utah great. So Heather, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
That's Heather Zenzak, Pluralsight's Chief Marketing Officer. The time is 9:32. Mountain Money will be right back.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics and KPCW supporter, providing knee and shoulder care focused on cartilage restoration and joint resurfacing. We are now incorporating stem cell therapy and regenerative orthopedics. More information on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
All right, welcome back to Mountain Money. That was a great conversation with Heather Zenzak. We thank her for coming in, and we're very happy to hear that Pluralsight's going to be staying here in town. 2,500 new jobs over the next decade in the state of Utah. That's big.
And I just asked her as she was walking out the door, I said, when are you going to make your announcement about where that new headquarters will be? And she had mentioned between like Murray and Draper.
Are they going to break the news on KPCW?
Wouldn't that be great? And she said, hopefully by the end of the year, but don't hold her to that. So
okay. All right.
We're not going to hold you to that, Heather.
We'll close the loop on that, and we'll begin a new loop. In studio with us now is Kate Mapp. She is with the Park City Library and specifically with the Business and Finance Center. So thank you for joining us this morning, and tell us a little bit about the types of services you do in the Business and Finance Center.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I am the Adult Services Librarian, so anything that pertains to people 18 and over, I oversee. And part of that is our Finance and Business Center. And this center is both virtual and physical as well. So you can go to our website, parkcitylibrary.org, and over in the eBooks and Research tab, there is a Business and Finance Center. And these are all free websites and databases that our patrons of our community can access online. Some of them require a library card, and so you would have to enter that in just as if you were to check out physical books at the library. But we have some great resources there. And then also, we have resources physically at the library that you can come and check out. And we don't have a specific sign that says Business and Finance Center, but it's actually over in our copy center, which is treated as, you know, like kind of like a Kinko's, like where you can come and make copies. And, you know, you have kind of a whole desk where you can process your paperwork. But then also there we have resources that people can look up as well. And I can talk about those specifically.
So you say you help your patrons come up with a complete realistic business plan. How do you start that process with somebody?
Yeah, so we have a partnership with the it's called the Park City, Park City Business Resource Center. And this is put on by a gentleman named John Butler. He's fairly well known in our community, but he also is affiliated with the Salt Lake City Community College Business Center. And he comes up once a month to the library to meet with people just on a first come, first serve basis, the first Tuesday of every month from 5 to 8. And he sits down with you to come up with a business plan and looking at finance and funding options as well. So this is our a really great program that, you know, people can actually get that one-on-one contact to help them plan for the future.
So that's business. Tomorrow night, 5 to 8. Yeah.
Yes, but actually he's on vacation. So it'll be November that he'll come back. And so that is November, December, January, and February. He'll be there first Tuesday of every month from 5 to 8.
So we've gotten our notes, kind of the high-level services that are under the Business and Finance Center. So one of them is helping people with business plan development. Another one is with funding options if people are looking to get funding for their company. Tell our audience how the Park City Library can help in that regard.
Yeah, so meeting with John is one option. He has a wealth of knowledge with that. But then also we have a new database that our patrons can access at the library, but it's an online database, but the subscription, you have to physically come into the library to access it. And this is called the Foundation Directory Online Database. And this is more geared towards nonprofits, small businesses, and individuals. And they, it's called prospect researching, where you can have access to all this information online through this database about potential grantors. So, for example, the McDonald Foundation might actually, fund your business, but rather than, just filling out the grant application and throwing it into the hat and hoping for the best, you can actually do research before that to see if your company or your nonprofit is a good match for that grant maker. And so you have access to all their like 990s and past information of who they have funded in the past. And then they also have direct contacts to those foundations or grant makers where you can actually call them up or, contact them through LinkedIn to say, hey, this is who I am. When my application comes through, maybe, check it out. And so it increases your odds to maybe potentially getting a grant for your project or your organization.
Do you have any examples of local small businesses or any local businesses that have come through the library system and had help from you guys?
Not yet. This is a new database, but that was brought to my attention actually from a community member, and she thought that this would be a good fit for our community and for the library. And so we're hoping that more people will find interest in this database, and we can help you with that process.
Yeah, the library system is really in a state of flux. We were talking earlier with the chief marketing officer of Pluralsight and how marketing has changed over the last decade. What it means to be a library has changed quite a bit over the last decade. What's the vision for the Park City Library System? What do you guys on a high level hope to be for our community?
Yeah, so this is a really exciting time to be a part of libraries and then also to invest in your community library, because we are changing into a new model where we're reaching out to people online, remotely from their homes, but then also by providing really great programming and resources. And so our vision at the Park City Library is to become the community's living room. And part of that is, trying to help you succeed. And so whether it's, helping you with your homework at night or, doing your taxes or coming up with a business plan, this is the place to come. And as people start to, downsize in their homes or, start getting rid of like the physical books, we are the place where you can come and access that information in the future.
And we've been talking about business owners and how you can help them, but you can also help people personally with their own finances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we actually do have another online database for people who are interested in stocks and bonds resources, and this is called Value Line. And you can actually access this through our website, but then at the library if you need librarians' assistance. And Value Line is a stock and bond resource center. and you can get up-to-date information. We used to have a print subscription at the library, but we wanted to get this information out to people as soon as possible because it's time sensitive. And so this is a great way for us to give this to our community. And it's, if you wanted it in, you know, for your business, it's actually a fairly expensive database. And so with the library's help, we can, you know, help, you know, personal financiers or, you know, people who want to just find out on their own how to invest. This is a free way to do that with your library card.
Yeah, and I work in the business. I can share. Value Line is a great resource. It's something that people that have an interest in this should be using. As you say, it's expensive, so it's great to be able to have access to that for free through the local library. Another one is, I look at your list, you have what's called the FINRA Investor Education series. FINRA is a regulatory body. The much of the broker industry is self-regulated, and FINRA is that regulatory body. So that's a great resource. And then I don't see it on the list, but for folks that aren't brokers, for folks that are fee-only, people can do research on those firms and those individuals at sec.gov, G-O-V. Mm-hmm. And you absolutely, if you're looking for a financial advisor, should go to the FINRA website, or you should go to sec.gov and check them out, because there's some really important information there. I want to switch to the team that's available to folks at the library. My youngest daughter is actually interested in being a librarian, and so I've learned a lot about what it takes to be a librarian. And it's a very educated team. For the most part, most full-time librarians have a master's in their field. Tell us about the team at the local Park City Library.
Yeah. So you actually do go to library school to become a librarian. And so I believe we have four librarians that have their Master's of Library Science degree at the Park City Library. And all of us, you know, specialize in different things. So, for example, we have a youth services librarian, and she focuses on all youth and teen activities. And then we also have, you know, a cataloger that, you know, helps process and, you know, make sure that our materials are ready to go out to the public, either virtually or physically.
So can I ask an ignorant question? I suspect other people might be surprised too. You know, one of the things in the education system that we're working on is, how do we get people the skills that they need to be successful in their job sooner, so that they can stop paying tuition and start making money? What is it about the library system that I don't understand that requires a master's to be effective at that job? I was surprised that it takes a master's degree really to land a full-time job at a public library.
Yeah, so there is no Bachelor of Science library degree. The push is either for a master's or a PhD for the library science.
It seems crazy to me that it requires that much education.
Well, so, you know, so my background is anthropology. And so I view the library world as, you know, you get your bachelor's to make sure that you're, you know, well-rounded, or maybe, you know, specialized in, you know, maybe a social science or a history or English literature, whatever it is, engineering, business. And then, so you have this, like, foundation to provide to the community. And then when you... You know, for me, later on in life, I decided I wanted to work in a library. And so then that's when I wanted to focus on more of the structure of the library, the organization, the metadata, the, you know, programming, the ethics behind library science is actually a huge driving force to make sure that, you know, we are... you know, have a strong ethics within our community, our professional community. And so that's why, you know, I am not a, I do not specialize in business finance, but I specialize in a whole plethora of things and resources. And so that's where librarians, you know, we have to be well-rounded, holistic in our thinking, to make sure that, you know, I can recommend the best book for a teen or a youth, and then also I can help people with their taxes or help them find resources with their taxes or business or, computer skills and things like that. So that's where we're almost like the middleman trying to help connect people with those resources.
You're the educator of the educators. You know, it's most important that you have critical thinking skills to the nth degree, because when people come to you and they're looking for something or trying to research something, you have to ask the right questions to figure out what they need really and the best way to get them there.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness for librarians.
Yeah, and come and sign up for a library card and enjoy all the fun resources that you guys have. I do want to mention one more resource that anyone would probably be interested in, and we have subscribed to Consumer Reports database. And so with your library card, you can go shopping to find that washer and dryer and go to our website and enter your library card number, and you have Consumer Reports for free. And so no need to sign up for that monthly subscription.
Well, and as a frugal person, that's $9.99 a month that you can save by using the library. I also want to thank you. You know, my youngest daughter likes to study in the library, the one that wants to be a librarian. And the free Wi-Fi service, you know, it's kind of a convenience for many of us, but it's a necessity for many of the lower income people in this neighborhood. They don't have Wi-Fi at home, and it's so important that the library offers Wi-Fi. So thank you for doing that. Our guest this morning has been Kate Mapp. She is with the Park City Library Services, specifically the Business and Finance Center. Kate, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And stay tuned to Mound Money. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch counties.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com, San Francisco Design. Love your home.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, interesting conversation with the Park City Library. We are going to switch gears, and we're going to talk about email delivery and email marketing. Our guest is Brad Owen. He is the CEO and founder of a company called Never Bounce. Brad, welcome to Mound Money.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you guys just relocated or opened a new office here in Park City, which is why you're our guest this morning. We want to get to that, but first I'd like you to share with our audience what Never Bounce does.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. So Never Bounce is sort of a culmination, and it's a piece of software that we built over the years from something that we actually really needed. So our headquarters is based here in Cleveland, Ohio, and Never Bounce was built as a necessity. It was really a need that we had as an agency. So we ran an agency. We were a digital agency. We built software, handled marketing, and all sorts of things for companies. And so we ran that for about 9 years. And what we found was, we were sending an awful lot of mail for clients to the spam box. And so we had this sort of ultimate problem where we weren't hitting the inbox for companies. And, you know, that's obviously a pretty big issue when your mail isn't being delivered. So what Never Bounce is a platform that we've developed that is sort of this quintessential cleaning platform for mail. So at its core, we developed a technology called email verification. And email verification identifies whether or not an email is valid. So we're used in a couple different ways, but we essentially have a self-service portal for companies. They can upload their data, so you'd upload your email list, and we go through and scrub it from top to bottom. And by going through our process and identifying the invalid emails, we're able to ensure that you have a very low bounce rate. Well, the lower your bounce rate, the more email delivers to an inbox. And so the industry has really been sort of turning on to this over the years and identifying what a large issue this was. So we've sort of been fortunate enough to now provide a solution to ensure that these companies can now reach the inbox at a much higher level. So we sort of guarantee inbox delivery to the inbox by virtue of cleaning their mail. And sort of a secondary method, our platform's also used to verify emails at the point of registration. So this is a really fast-growing segment of our company. and it's pretty widely used. But you think of anywhere you put in an email address, whether it be a registration form, newsletter sign-up forms, you know, a credit application, anywhere you put an email in, we identify whether or not that email is active and real at the time of entry. So that takes out the issues of potentially mistyped emails or fake emails or whatever that might be. But the ultimate goal for our company is to allow companies to reach their customers.
And you said your headquarters is in Cleveland, Ohio, but just last week you announced the new office expansion in Park City. How many employees will you have here?
Yeah, so it's very exciting for us. So we have a couple employees coming out to Park City. We spent months, so probably the last 6 to 8 months, we've been searching for sort of a new home for our customer success team and then also to bridge out our development team. And, you know, we were in San Jose and San Francisco, and we spent some time in Denver. But at the end of the day, we really felt this connection to Park City. And so there's a lot of reasons for that, but we're super excited about it. So, you know, this is really for us to come out there, get our sort of, you know, toes wet and understand the environment in a better way. But we think it's going to be a really good fit. So the customer success team specifically is a team that onboards new customers and is really a one-on-one connection. And, you know, we wanted to find a specific area to grow that segment of our company because the customer success portion of our business is so important.
So I'm torn. I have definitely have an allegiance here to Park City, and we're glad to see you come to Park City. I also was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio, probably about 15 miles south of where you're at now, a little town called Independence.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I know Cleveland has no shortage of workers and no shortage of office space. What was taking place in the company that gave you a need to relocate your customer success team? You mentioned San Jose. You were looking out west. What's going on in your business where it made sense for you to relocate that team?
Sure. So, well, first and foremost, we love Cleveland. So, you know, Cleveland's really been working on the tech scene over the last 15 years, and, you know, I've been sort of proud to be a part of that. With that being said, you know, I think that, you know, Steve Case has been working on this Rise of the Rest concept, and it makes a lot of sense. So if you're not familiar with it, it's really this concept of being able to move into different geographic areas to better build the sort of perfect business. And so, you know, being a software company, we can really work from anywhere. But, you know, I think in one of the big things for us was sort of this culture behind the type of people that we want speaking to our customers and really there to help. And it's not that maybe Cleveland didn't have that particular fit. But, you know, I think that it's sort of this concept that it'll be easier for us to find that fit. And on top of that, you know, we really didn't have a hub for our West Coast client base. And so, you know, this allows us to sort of get the mix in a handful of different ways. You know, when we looked at these other areas, I think what we found was most of those, you know, we're an emerging company. So, you know, we're 3 years old and, you know, we've really growing rapidly. We're just reaching now 50,000 customers. You know, and so we're sort of in this position where it's time to grow. And so you're trying to figure out exactly, you know, the best way to grow in different segments. And so, you know, we're a worldwide business. We about 40% of our business is actually in the States. But of that business, a lot of it takes place on the West Coast, just naturally because of all the software companies out there. So, you know, this sort of rounded out for us. It was culturally defining. You know, I think Park City for us, when we came in town, you know, there was sort of high service. There was this attention to health and recreation. And then this emerging tech scene. So, you know, we kind of were over in the Kimball Junction area, and we got to see, you know, Skull Candy's new development and sort of this new construction taking place. And I think for us, it's important to not be a part of just a tech scene. You know, it's sort of cliche. You know, for us, we really wanted to be a part of an emerging tech scene. So a lot of the places we went and sort of looked at, it was for us, it was just, you know, it was kind of already done. They were already done growing. And, you know, that's awesome. I mean, there are really some great places. Denver was an awesome tech scene to look at and consider. But Park City had something special about it that I thought would really fit for the company. So yeah.
So where is the new office, and are you looking for new employees?
Yes, we certainly are. So we'll immediately be opening some new positions. So those will both be on the development front as well as the customer success. And so we are right at sort of the Kimball Junction area, and we are opening at the so right now we have some space at Assemble, which is the it's a co-working space there. So we're sort of kind of easing our way in, and then going to be looking at some more permanent space. We were fortunate enough, Lee Marshall from Magic Space Entertainment, who is right there in the area. He's actually a Cleveland guy as well, and was you know super kind to kind of give us the lay of the land and show us everything in the area. And so, you know, seeing another company that moved from Cleveland to that area and has been sort of so successful in that transition, yeah, that I think was also a positive point for us.
So I'm glad the team from Magic Space was helpful. I'm curious. We're a business show. We talk about business topics. Part of that is just the team that runs the city here, Park City. How helpful were they with your decision? What role did the leadership in Park City play?
Well, I'm sure they would have been fantastic, but we actually never really got to that point. So, you know, for us, it was a matter of really just coming out. And, you know, we've been out a handful of times to really understand the lay of the land. And, you know, from my perspective, you know, it was really just about understanding the people in the area. So that's where a lot of our focus was. You know, it wasn't so much about, you know, tax benefits or any sort of, you know, anything else outside of that. We were really just trying to figure out what was best for the company and what was best for the people that work at our company. That was really our initiative. So we haven't had a lot of correspondence with the city as of yet, but I'm sure it'll be great when we do so.
And Brad, we just had Heather Zinzak with Pluralsight in here, and we told her mm-hmm. we were going to talk to you. And I said, what question would you ask Brad? And she said, ask him what his secret sauce is, because you guys are doing what everybody's trying to do to scrub the email list. How do you do it?
Yeah, secret sauce. That's a good question. Well, I can't tell you that. But
it wouldn't be very secret sauce if you
yeah,
told us.
Exactly. A magician never tells his tricks. So, you know, I think really what it comes down to, you know, we're asked that a lot. Without saying so much about sort of our proprietary technology, I think really what it comes down to is accuracy. There's a handful of companies that clean mail out there and then also offer verification services. And some of those companies were around when we first started. But and I can tell you that I would have never sold my email marketing agency, if we had a good solution to use. You know, we literally built this solution because there was nothing in the market that we felt comfortable using. And the reason why was accuracy. So accuracy is kind of what it all comes down to. If at any time, you know, we misappropriate or call an email invalid that is valid, you know, that's a potential loss for a customer. So when we sort of came out into the space and looked at that, I just immediately said, this accuracy is so important. And when we first ran our lists, you know, back in the agency days, what we found is that a whole bunch of really good customers were lumped into these sort of other, you know, these secondary classifications of saying, hey, this is probably a bad email, but I knew they were good emails.
Hey, Brad.
And so,
Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap at that. We thank you for joining.
Oh, sure,
we've got the end of the. We've got NPR news coming up here, so we do
Absolutely.
Need to wrap up and take a break. Our guest has been Brad Owen. He's the CEO and founder of Never Bounce, which is moving to Park City. Welcome to Park City, and we'll look forward to chatting with you in the future.
Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate everything.
Mount Money will be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. We just have a brief second, and with that, we'd like to thank our great sponsors. They include Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Designs, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, Park City Mountain and Apex Residences in Viridian Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties.
And we want to thank our guests, Heather Zinzak, the Chief Marketing Officer of Pluralsight, Kate Mapp from the Park City Library, and Brad Owen, the CEO of Never Bounce. It's been a great show. If you tuned in late and want to catch the whole thing, go to kpcw.org. NPR News starts right now.